and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Our topic today is soil organic matter. But if you've got any questions for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about aside from soil organic matter, we'd be happy to take your phone call. I know we're going to get into the Ag PhD mailbag here just shortly, even to start the show. We've got so many questions. So we'll get to that just about right away. If you would like to call us here, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so with organic matter, I'll just give you a couple of things, then we'll get into the mailbag. And I would start with this. The number one thing that most people don't realize about soil organic matter is that it releases nutrients for free every year. Now, it's going to release more nutrients the more heat you have and if you have adequate rainfall and also good soil life. Okay, so in our area, for example, where we farm, I normally figure for each 1% of organic matter, in terms of nitrogen, we get 20 to 30 pounds out for each 1% of organic matter, keep in mind, per year. Phosphate, 4 to 7 pounds, and sulfur, 2 to 3 pounds. So let's just say, for example, we have 5% organic matter soil. That would be good in our area. The average kind of in our area, I would say, is 3. But anyway, we do have some fields that are up at 5. So if I've got 5% organic matter, that means I get 100 to 150 pounds of free nitrogen every year. I get 20 to 35 pounds of free phosphorus every year. And I get 10 to 15 pounds of free sulfur. Now, does that sound like fun? Of course it does. So right there, that's one of the reasons why you want to build soil organic matter. So the next generation that's farming that ground is pulling free nutrients every single year. It's awesome. Okay, the next thing that I want you to think about is, and this is something most people do not realize, for each 1% of increase in organic matter, the soil will hold approximately 4% more water, roughly. So let's say that over the life of your farm, over your lifetime as a farmer, let's say you have a very long farming career and you're able to raise the soil organic matter levels 3% on your ground. Now, that might not seem like a big deal when I say, well, that's 12% more water holding capacity, but 12% more water holding capacity really is a big deal. So again, if you want to leave your ground in better shape for the next generation, work on building soil organic matter. That soil will hold more nutrients and release more nutrients. It will release or hold and release more water. So those are good things. Plus, the soil is less prone to compaction. It will typically have more life in the soil. It's able to hold anions better, things that can normally leach through the ground. They don't leach as easily when you have higher organic matter levels. There are just lots and lots of good things about soil organic matter. I mean, there's a limit to it. I would say if you're getting above 7%, now you start holding more than you might want, like I think about herbicide especially. But if you're in that 5% to 7% kind of range, to me, and this is just personal opinion, that to me would be about the ideal level of organic matter I would like in my soil. All right, we'll talk about organic matter throughout the show today, but right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Oh boy, I got a pile of drainage tile questions.
Well, we did
Brian.
Have a tile show talk about tile yesterday. Go ahead.
All right. First of all, this is from PA. He said we fixed drainage 5 years back by putting drainage tile in 40 feet apart. Also, we're using some sulfuric acid out there trying to cut the pH. Mm-hmm. I'm just not getting enough yield to justify the investment level at this point. What would you suggest?
The investment level of the tile or the sulfur?
The whole thing.
Well,
you're just talking about two pieces here. We still haven't fixed any of the fertility issues.
Right.
So, yes, the drainage, that's a big deal. That's important. The pH level, yes, we want to adjust that. But along the way, we have to feed the crop well. So that would be the next thing, getting complete soil analysis with all the nutrients, base saturation levels so we can adjust calcium, magnesium, those types of things in addition to your N, P, and K and sulfur and micros and all that. So, yeah, complete soil analysis would be the big thing. And PA, if you want to take those soil analysis, that'd be great. We'd be happy to take a look at that and help you. I would suggest, as you get to know this field, just take one field, 1 acre grids, send that in, and let's take a look and see what we get.
Yeah, and I just really question, is the tile actually working well? Because
Maybe the drainage is working, Brian. There are well-drained fields that don't
well,
yield.
Yes. No, I agree with that 100%. But I just am coming back to, as long as the drainage is working well, then yes, I agree with you 100%. We got to take the next step, which is fixing fertility.
All right. Then from Doug, he said,
Stop. One more second here. He said sulfuric acid. I assume we're talking elemental sulfur that converts to sulfuric acid. You don't want to get too carried away on that. I could see how a person could overspend on that. You got to do a little bit at a time and just go from there. You don't have to fix that pH day one. Just be working on it over a period of years, and eventually you'll get it down, but you got to feed the crop. Go ahead.
All right, this one from Doug in Saskatchewan. He said, how do you deal with ground sinking or settling where tile is installed?
Well, it's a one-time deal. That's just going to happen. Typically, we do tillage then. So if somebody was trying to be no-till, it's very hard. What we'll typically do is we've got you could have blades pushing the dirt kind of back in to that spot. Otherwise, just almost normal tillage will do a fairly decent job. But yeah, we set this up so we got two blades that can pull the dirt back in toward the center, and so we've been using some of that.
All right, lots of questions here that we'll get to in a little bit. If you have an agronomic question for us, our phone lines are open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, like we've been answering some emails here so far. radio@agphd.com is our email address. And you can find us on Twitter as well, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. We're going to talk about organic matter in your soil on today's show. Stay tuned. You're listening to AgPhD Radio.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Hot spots and moisture in your bin can cost you thousands in lost revenue. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans exactly when you want them to, naturally bringing your grain to ideal temperature and humidity. Master bin management with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about soil organic matter on today's show, and I love it when we focus below ground. I think we talk a lot about what's happening above ground and what we're looking at from the end of the field or as we're walking out in the field, but I think digging in to the soil and seeing what's happening underneath is really important. Real happy to have Scott Inman with us right now. He's with Mycorrhizal Applications and with Valent. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me today.
Now, when we think about that below ground part of the plant, to me, this is where organic matter, most of the organic matter build in our soil can come from. And getting a better developed root system working in conjunction with microbes, it's really what it's all about, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's several fractions in there. And, you know, it's not only the buildup, but also the sustainability. And, you know, we're focused on that microbial part. And that's a big part on that long-term rebuild, as well as sustainability of that organic matter is based on this living biological part. Correct.
Let's talk more about that, because we get so many questions about mycorrhizae fungi, and right now we're getting a lot of questions from people raising cover crops. And one of the goals of the cover crop is, hey, I want to build organic matter in my soil, but I also want to have a plant that works together with mycorrhizae so I don't have a problem next year. I'm assuming you get some questions along this line. Do you have some recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the soil and that organic matter, a big part of that is the soil fungi. I mean, that is the big, when you look at microbial biomass, mycorrhizae is part of that, as well as the saprophytic. And so it's kind of build and it will come. The mycorrhizae is kind of the biggest biomass, and that's the, and then the other fungi will kind of come along because they can't sustain themselves without that. And when you look at the balance of field, should have about 50% of the microbial biomass should be fungi, which is the saprophytic plus the mycorrhizae. So, you know, building that and getting that established, and, you know, the more you can have more plants out there, the more that it can establish. And the other thing about the other fungi is they're the ones that are going to break down that cellulose and lignin. That's very important. If you see out there that your corn stalks are staying out there for, you know, multiple years, that's a good indicator that your fungi population is not big enough to degrade that, because the bacteria won't do that. So that's really key, and just keep that plant and that root and that fungi maintaining itself is really key to maintain and develop that soil health, soil structure, that organic matter.
You know, we've had a lot of prevent plant acres. We've had a lot of guys that have had some struggles out in fields lately. And I know one of the things that we've learned is fungi levels are really tough to build back up in soil if they get run down. So give us some hope. Give us some encouragement for some of these tough acres. What's the best way to go about building it back up, Scott?
Well, the key is keeping a plant out there. Like I said, mycorrhizae is a big part of that. And as far as that fungi, getting that volume back up, and so keeping a plant out there, the mycorrhizae, other fungi need the mycorrhizae, they need the plant out there. So having a plant out there with that cover crop, with that you know, in your normal crop rotation, that's the fastest way to build that up, because that can keeps that continual activity, that you know, hyphal network, that biomass continue active and continue to grow.
One of the more popular questions we've gotten the latter half of this summer has been drought conditions. And what can we do? We can't get, guys have harvested wheat. They can't get a cover crop to come because they just aren't getting the rain. Is there much we can do in that? And are we certain to lose some fungi if that happens?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, specific to mycorrhizae is that, you know, they're there to help the plant. And so even under those drought conditions, if you can't get the plant established, you will lose some. I mean, one of the major losses to mycorrhizae without the plant is predation. There is other organisms that actually feed on it, and the hyphae, and, you know, that loss over time. But, yeah, there is try to get that plant established, and it will help, and it will allow the plant to establish if you can get the mycorrhizae and get the plant to develop. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
Getting the mycorrhizae built back up in the soil, have you found the best luck through in-furrow treatments, through seed treatments? I know you've looked at a lot of different ways to help build this back up. What's been working? What's been economical for farmers?
Well, the most convenient is in-furrow, or, you know, and it's tough, you know, because of all the seed requirements to get it on seed, but it's really just getting it in the soil. We've been some 2x2, you know, it's just getting it into the root zone. I mean, we've looked at a lot of different formulations. We've got some new liquids that, you know, make it more easier to mix with starter fertilizer or put it out. And so it's just all about getting it in that root zone and get it started, and it goes. You know, the unique thing about mycorrhizae is that it's there for the longevity of the plant, so you don't have to worry about a reapplication. So once you get it established, it will continue to go. And then as you get into that cycle with that cover crop, it's getting it to develop. So just need to get it into the root zone.
Great stuff. We're talking with Scott Inman. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Thank you.
Let's head down to Kansas State. We've got Dorivar Ruiz Diaz with us right now. Dorivar, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. We're talking about soil organic matter, and certainly that microbial portion of this is really important. Talk to us about organic matter levels in the state of Kansas and what growers are doing down there to try to build them up.
Yes, organic matter, of course, I see it more from the soil fertility standpoint, which is really the area that I work with. But, of course, we have so many benefits from organic matter, from fertility, from the physical properties, the biology that we're just discussing. So it's really a lot of multiple aspects to that. But here in Kansas, we do have a variety of soils. We do have soils that tends to be a little bit more of a sandy soil, more fine texture soil. So we can see quite a range of soil organic matter levels. And of course, what's normal for some of those soils could be a little bit different. The same for you guys that are further north, you may see higher organic matter levels as well. So it's a little bit specific to, you know, producers, where they are, what kind of soils they're managing. But ultimately, what they're looking is to try to improve to optimum levels to what would be ideal for their soils. There's a lot of interest in using cover crops, pay attention to rotations, and of course, just, you know, keeping residue cover, minimizing any erosion problems. All of those will obviously be contributing to losing some of that organic matter, which is a great value for fertility and productivity. There's also some access to manure and compost in parts of the state, and that's been one of the key sources that many farmers may use to increase organic matter a little bit quickly and trying to restore some of the soils that may be a little bit degraded already.
You've got a lot of great points that you've made already, Dorivar. Now, I look at that erosion one as one that probably needs to be talked about more. When we think about soil organic matter, we've got some very, very valuable soil in that top inch. And if we lose any of it due to erosion, it's devastating to our farms. Talk about erosion a little bit. Is there a lot of no-till that's happening in your state? You mentioned the cover crops. What are growers doing to try to minimize that?
Yes, and that's a key for us. You know, in parts of the state, we do have, especially in the western part of the state, we can have soil erosion basically in the winter times, wind erosion, and then in the east part, we have water erosion. And so, yes, conservation practices, keeping some type of cover during the year is been a big factor moving forward in recent years, because again, a lot of farmers doing an excellent job increasing organic matter, but then the question is, how do we keep it there? And of course, minimizing erosion is a key aspect of that. Cover crops, there's a lot more interest in cover crops, and of course, where we can include cover crops kind of vary a little bit depending on where you are. We do have some, especially western part of the state, much drier. So we do have less flexibility in terms of where we can put those cover crops, as we have to also keep water. But it's really something that we're seeing more and more farmers taking advantage of that to bring, again, organic matter and cycling nutrients. And again, kind of going back to the value of organic matter for nutrients, we do talk a lot about nitrogen, but we are seeing more issues with sulfur as well, and all of those are nutrients that are coming primarily from organic matter.
Absolutely. Great stuff. We're talking to Dorivar Ruiz Diaz with Kansas State University with a holistic view of crop production, looking at organic matter as really the product of all of the practices that we're using out on the farm, including minimizing erosion, soil fertility, cover crops, crop rotation, and so on. Dorivar, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans so your grain naturally reaches ideal temperature and humidity. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. Today we're talking about soil organic matter, and I just had a few more points that I'll make here quick, and then we'll get back into some of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. When it comes to soil organic matter, I just want to run through some of the benefits that we see in soil. So I mentioned already that it can hold anions far better than clay. So a lot of the things that leach out of the soil, think about nitrate, sulfate, boron. Organic matter actually can hold some of those. So that's a good thing. Organic matter does have nutrients that it will release very slowly over time, but it can hold a lot of nutrients, roughly three times as many nutrients as clay. When you have good organic matter levels, it improves soil structure and tilth. It reduces compaction and increases oxygen levels in soil. It helps hold soil in place. It reduces erosion potential. It helps filter contaminants as water moves through the soil. It improves microbial activity in soil life, and it allows soils to warm more quickly in the spring. I'll tell you, too, when we talk about cation exchange capacity here on the show all the time, what cation exchange capacity is, just so you understand, it's when farmers will say, I have heavy soil or I have light soil. Well, that's all relative to your area. So that's why we like the cation exchange capacity number, because now we're all on the same page. And cation exchange capacity is a measurement of the type of clay you have in your soil, the amount of clay, and the amount of organic matter. Well, you can't change the type of clay or the amount of clay you have in your soil. So all you're going to change is the amount of organic matter. So in other words, if you say, boy, I got light soil, I'd like it to hold a little more stuff, water, nutrients, you name it, The only way to do that is you have to increase your soil organic matter levels. So how do you increase organic matter? There are five main things, but really the number one thing is, like, by far and away the number one thing, it's reduced tillage. So if you want to go straight out no-till, that is by far the best thing you can do. Even if you, let's say, go strip-till, for example, that is a definite improvement over, like, what we used to do on the farm was, in the fall, we'd mowboard plow. We also might disc. We would field cultivate twice in the spring. I mean, now that's major tillage, okay? When you do that, you will be depleting your soil's organic matter. I can almost guarantee you. And that's the reason why, if you look in the United States anyway, over the last 100 years, organic matter levels have gone down. Now, here in the last few years, as more farmers have adopted reduced tillage practices, organic matter levels have kind of stabilized. But you absolutely can increase organic matter levels in your soil if you want to. Number one's reduced tillage. Now, I'm not saying you have to go no-till, but the less tillage you do, the faster your organic matter levels will build. Number two, plant high-residue crops with lots of roots. Okay, so for example, corn has roughly five times the root mass of soybeans, so corn would be a better choice than soybeans. You can still build organic matter levels with soybeans, but it's faster with corn. That's all I'm saying. Number three is use manure and or compost. Four is use cover crops. And number five is use biological products like Quikrets, Decomp, Microcycle, Nutricycle. There are lots of biological products that are going to help, not dramatically, but they're going to help. So again, it's reduced tillage, plant high residue crops with lots of roots. Keep in mind, roots, that's where the organic matter really comes from. It's not the above ground residue you see. It's the roots breaking down and becoming organic matter over time, okay? Use manure and or compost was number three, four was cover crops, and five, use biological products. So that's my quick summary on organic matter, soil organic matter. It is a good thing. Again, I would say there's a limit to it. For me, that limit's probably, I'm going to call it 7%. Ideally, I'd like my soil 5 to 7% organic matter. If, let's say, today you're sitting there at 2 or 3%, can you build it to 5 to 7% in the next 30 years? Absolutely, you can. Just follow the steps we talked about today. You got to be diligent. You got to stay with it. It's going to take time, but when you do that, you will reap the rewards down the road. All right, let's jump back into some mailbag questions. Darren, what you got next?
All right, this is from Riley, just across the border. He said, I've got a field.
Wait, you can't just say just across the border. You got to say
where. Manitoba.
Okay.
Manitoba, sorry. Riley says, I've got a 50-acre field planning to tile on 30-foot spacing. I'm going to use 4-inch pipe. I want to remove 3/8 of an inch of water per 24 hours. Now onto the meat of my question. The biggest boot my tile plow has is 8 inches. Can I use an 8-inch main line to feed my lift station? Can I use multiple lines to feed a lift station?
Okay, most likely what you're going to want to feed that lift station is a big pipe. Doesn't have to be super long, but a big pipe. And so when you put the lift station in, you're probably going to want to trench in just a pipe going out there for a little ways, and maybe it's a 12-inch pipe, 14-inch pipe, whatever, and then dump your 8-inch main lines, or you might call them sub-mains, into that. So Darren threw some numbers out, and I'll be honest, I didn't write them down and I didn't punch them in on the calculator or anything to see how much water you're going to remove and all that kind of stuff. But let's just put it this way. You can run multiple main lines out in a field, or again, many people would call those sub-main lines, and your main line is just that little line that's big right next to that lift station. I would say, too, with the lift station, you got to think about what's the the reservoir, the holding capacity for the tank, basically. So I'll just give you an example. In one field, we put in 1,000 feet of big pipe, and I don't remember what it was, 14-inch, 16-inch, something like that. And that basically can hold a whole bunch of water for the lift station. So the water's sitting there and ready to go. You want to have a big tank or something like that, or just a big tile line with water ready to go, so your pump doesn't have to turn on and turn off, turn on, turn off. That's a fast way to kill a lift station pump. I'll also tell you that it's money well spent when you get a two-stage motor. So it will go fast when the, let's call it the float, is higher, and it will go slower when your water level is down, when your float is down. So you want to keep that motor running as long as you can without the start-stop action.
Thanks for the questions, Riley. Got this one from Must Love Dogs. Okay. I do too. He said, I've got a problem. I'm in West Tennessee, and there's just one company that puts in tile around here, and believe it or not, he is backlogged. So I guess probably the request, Brian, is going to be don't talk about tiling for a while in West Tennessee. But he said, I only need about 25 acres of my farm tiled, and I'd like to do it, but I just can't afford to buy my own plow because I just don't have enough acres.
Right, so right.
The local tile company is 2 hours away. They don't want to take a 25-acre job 2 hours away from home. What would be my best strategy? I could buy a Soil Max plow for about $35,000, install the tile, and then try to resell the plow.
That's one option. Otherwise, talk to some neighbors. That's what I would do. There are a lot of farmers that buy tile plows together with neighbors when there's no tile contractor in the area. Or, quite frankly, maybe there's some young farmer that has some extra time and has the ability to do things, but he doesn't maybe have the capital to do things today. And maybe you go in partnership with him and he or she starts putting in tile for some of the neighbors. I don't know. I mean, you just have to get a little bit creative. So yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that there aren't more tiling contractors around there. There should be. I've been to Tennessee many times. You need drainage. I know that much.
Get this from Stan in North Alabama, and we're just about at a break, but he's got a two-part question, so I'll throw the first part at you. First of all, in sandy soil, would you put a sock-wrapped drain tile in, or do you think it will just plug up?
I would put a sock around the tile. You could go narrow slot. I prefer the sock. The narrow slot's certainly cheaper. We've done both, but fine sand or silt. That's what we're talking about here. So if there's just a little bit of sand there, it's probably not a big concern. Here's the other thing. If your tile lines have lots of slope, this isn't as big an issue. But if you have pretty flat lines and fine sand or silt, that's where we like either narrow slot or, like for me, I do prefer the sock.
All right, I'll get to the second half of Stan's question right after this. And if you have an agronomic question for us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
When it comes to commanding herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Panther SC, an animal when it comes to speed of control and long residual on a broad spectrum of tough broadleaf weeds like mare's tail, Palmer amaranth, and water hemp. And did we mention convenience? Panther SC works in pre-plant, pre-emerge, and post-harvest systems and keeps your rotation options open. Nufarm and Panther SC, here to help.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and it's burned down and long-lasting residual powers, making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We are in the Ag PhD mailbag time right now, which means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions throughout the rest of the show. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. Find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty, or just give us a phone call at 844-442-4743. That's 844-44-AG-PHD. Just before the break, we had a couple of questions from Stan in North Alabama. His first question was, should I use sock-wrapped drain tile in light sandy soils? His next question is, all right, these sandy soils have single-digit CEC, single-digit cation exchange capacity. And he said, I'm just curious if you could discuss the differences between drain tile efficiency in high versus low CEC soils. It seems to me that as quickly as our soils lose moisture, the tile may not make a difference since most farmers here say we're no more than a week away from a drought at any point. We do get 60 inches of rainfall, and some of our fields flood annually. Can we justify tile in this light sandy soil?
If it's all, let's call it a 5 CEC, the odds that tile is going to pay there are relatively slim. But what I would say is we see tremendous variance in fields everywhere. And so a lot of times what it is the best dirt has washed down the hill and now is sitting in the valleys, and that's where the CEC is higher, and that's where you need the tile. So a lot of times in situations like that, we talk to people about spot tiling, and then they'll put pivot systems up to irrigate the entire farm. So that's usually the way it goes, Darren, I would say. Now, is it possible that having drain tile there could help? Yes, it is certainly possible, especially because he added the word lift station. So what that tells me is that the water can't get away. So if the water can't get away, well, then pumping it out makes a crazy amount of sense. We have that on one of our fields where back in 1976, they came along and dredged out the creek, which was fine prior to that for us. Well, the problem is now they basically made a mound next to the creek, and basically the water has to flow away from it, and literally it's right there. I'm going, what? This is no good for us. So as soon as they put that in, we just started ending up with, I'll call it flooding. It wouldn't be flooding, but what do you do when the water now can't get away and before it could? So that was caused by our drainage district. And so all we did is just put tile in and put a lift station in, just pump the water right into its Silver Creek is its name. And now it serves its purpose. And now we can throw water in there. So that all works out great. So that would be the one thing I would say, Darren, if he's got that situation where the water sits there and for whatever reason it can't get to where it should be going naturally over the soil surface, then that would be a good reason to put in tile and a lift station, even with light soil.
All right, thanks for the question, Stan. This next one comes from Steve in Central South Dakota. He said, I've got a couple of fields I'm sending you soil samples for. They are currently growing grass and kochia, but I'm going to spray them off this fall and no-till corn in next spring. Do you think I have any shot at 200 bushel corn? If so, what would you do to get there?
Okay, so I've looked at the soil tests, and we got low sevens pH. When you get down into
on the one field, there's a
Hang on. I mean, there is one other new field that's in the eights, but anyway, where it's low sevens, regardless, that's up top. Down below, it's higher. And so that tells me right away we most likely have a drainage issue. And so for me, I'm probably going to be addressing drainage. One of the other things that I thought was interesting is the ground you're farming now, 5% organic matter. The new ground, there's one field that says 8% organic matter, and the other says 15% organic matter. So when you have 8% or 15%, I said organic matter, sorry, 8% to 15% potassium, then I'm super excited. To me, I go, wow, that's awesome. I got plenty of nutrients out there. So yeah, I'm excited. But you got to look at everything else, and let's get everything else in balance. So just for example, phosphorus was low. Boron was low, zinc was low, copper was low. You got to start looking at all the other stuff. Obviously, your K is in great shape, but you know, very few other things were. So is it possible that in year one you could raise 200 bushel corn? Well, it's possible if you get ample rainfall, but if you don't, then you're going to be in tough shape if you don't get that fertility fixed. When you have fertility right, then your crop needs less moisture, and here's the reason why. Crops bring in more water when they start to run short on nutrients, because think about it, nutrients primarily get into the plant with water. So if your crop is sitting good on nutrients, it's not going to bring in as much water, because it doesn't need the nutrients. So my point is, when you have inadequate fertility, like on this, you don't have nearly the phosphorus, the boron, the zinc, the copper to kind of match up with these high levels of K, then you're going to make your crop a water waster. We don't want to make our crops water wasters. We got to get the nutrients right, and then we're much more drought tolerant. And I'm not saying you're going to get 200 bushel corn without any rain, but I am saying you've got a better chance to raise a good crop whether or not you get the rainfall that you would really need to raise that 200 bushel corn.
Hey, thanks for the questions, and good luck to you, Steve. This one comes from PD, who says, I'm wondering why you guys say that it is harder to switch to Enlist soybeans because my neighbors are planting Xtend.
Well, when we first started talking about Enlist and Xtend years ago, we just said, hey, there's one thing you got to keep in mind. Dicamba kills Enlist beans. 2,4-D kills the Dicamba or Xtend beans. So any time that, let's say, all your neighbors are Xtend and you're the only guy sitting in the middle with Enlist, well, the odds are you're going to get your beans cupped. So that's the concern. Now, if it's Enlist, we don't see that. In other words, if you were the lone Xtend guy and everybody else is Enlist, I wouldn't get too worried if you're the Xtend person, because the new 2,4-D just, and when I say the new 2,4-D, I'm talking about Enlist 1. There's also Freelix out there, or at least there was. But those are the new 2,4-Ds that we are just simply not seeing volatility or the drift issues that we used to with the old 2,4-D. This new 2,4-D choline, it's called, is fantastic. We've been using it on our farm and at our field day site for years. It's completely unlike old 2,4-D, other than it kills the same weeds. So anyway, that's the reason why we talk about, hey, the switching thing, you might want to talk to your neighbors a little bit, because the last thing you want to have happen is your beans get all dinged up because your neighbor assumes you're planting Xtend, and then he isn't extra careful around those Enlist beans.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this one from Jake. He said, we've got a conventional alfalfa field that has a Johnson grass problem. It's a two-year-old stand. I'm wondering, can I use Eptam, or what would you recommend for a herbicide?
Eptam is only a pre-emerge herbicide. And when I say pre-emerge, it's pre-plant incorporated. So you actually have to till that in. What are you going to kill quackgrass with now? Nothing. Kill off the stand with Roundup and start over. It's about all you can do.
What if you did high rates of one of the post-emerge grass killers? Yeah, could you at least suppress it?
Yeah, you can try. I mean, so what Darren's talking about is like Select Max, Clethodim, you know, one of these grass killers. Yeah, you're going to ding it up a little bit, but are you going to kill it? No way. Quackgrass is a tough perennial weed. So if you would like to try that option first, give it a shot. By all means, go for it. But otherwise, unfortunately, you just have to wipe out the stand with Roundup. And when you spray the Roundup, by the way, make sure you use the highest labeled rate, keep your water volume down, and spray at least a couple weeks before the first frost in the fall to get the best kill and complete kill on the quackgrass all the way down into the rhizomes. Don't forget, that's the big problem that we have with quackgrass and why it's so tough. It has rhizomes. And so some people will say, well, I'm just going to kill it with tillage. And we as agronomists just laugh. And we go, yeah, all you're doing with tillage is spreading that thing around. Quackgrass is one of the toughest weeds we've ever fought. It takes a great rate of a systemic herbicide like Roundup to totally kill it, roots and all. Well, we'll be back with more and answering more of your questions right after this.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer. And I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Let's dive back into the Ag PhD mailbag here. We've got a question that came in from Chad. He said, I hear you talk on the radio a lot about leaf tissue analysis. Wondering if there is a handheld device and technology that could tell you where you're at for nutrient levels right in the field, or if there's something like that that you know of that's going to be coming out soon.
Nope. That would be our dream. We'd love to have that. And quite frankly, I'd love to have that on soil testing too. I'd love it if I could just drive across the field and I'd get all these readings. I'd be willing to spend a lot of money on that because it would save time and effort. And also, I wouldn't have to have even when I say 1 acre grids, people, a lot of people freak out and go, oh my gosh, that's way too small. And I'm like, no, it's not nearly small enough. I'd like to have about 100 foot grids or maybe 10 square foot grids, something like that eventually, if there was such a machine that could sense that. So yeah, I'd love to have a machine that could, as I go across my field, could sense plant tissue, could sense soil levels on all these nutrients. That would be amazing. I'd pay a lot of money for that.
Yeah, it'd be really, really cool. Be really, really cool. Hey, thanks for the question. We appreciate it. And if you hear about it, let us know because we'd like to get in on that too. All right, so this is from Kurt in Northwest Kansas. He said, my soybeans are looking really good this year, but I only have 3 or 4 pods per node with probably just an average of 3 beans per pod. That's not bad. That's obviously not bad. He said, what are the ways that I could increase my pods per node or increase the beans per pod? I'm currently planted at 140,000 population. Let me tackle that beans in the pod first, because it was just up in North Dakota this week looking at some early maturing soybeans. And what's interesting, you can tell by genetics what product you're looking at in some cases based on, is it a product that ever has some 4-bean pods in it? I know an early group 1 soybean that throws 5-bean pods fairly regularly. Yeah, there is a genetic thing there. There's certainly a genetic factor that influences the possible number of beans per pod. But the other thing that I saw is in drought conditions, when that plant gets stressed, a lot of times we saw aborted third beans in the pod. So we're really only getting 2 out of the 3 to actually make it to harvest. So keeping enough moisture and enough nutrients out there is going to be really important to make sure every one of those beans adds up. And while you may not be able to turn a 3-bean pod into a 4-bean pod or into a 5-bean pod without the right genetics, you may not be able to make that happen by your management practices. You certainly can make those beans bigger, and that's a big factor here in yield. So you're talking about, let's get more beans and more pods, and I agree with you. That definitely has to be part of the goal, but also making each bean bigger and heavier is going to be another piece there too. All right, so Brian, I'll let you comment on this too. I would say this, from my observations and my experience, getting more pods on a node requires you to be feeding the plant as those nodes are developing. And we saw it this year in some of the work we were doing on our farm when we had beans that had, let's just say, 10 nodes on them, and we sprayed some foliar feed to supplement what we're doing with our soil fertility program, and we had good weather, and we had some good rains at that time of year. We got more pods per node where we did the treatment versus the control. Then later on in the season, we didn't get rain, we got drought stress, and some of those later nodes that came out had very few pods per node. So I know getting the right moisture and getting the right food at the right time is going to help you keep more pods on each node.
Okay, I don't really think about it that way. I just think about, what do I need to increase yield? And how do I increase yield in soybeans? It's the same standard stuff, and we've been talking about it today. We talked a little about organic matter. We've talked about drainage. Fertility is a huge thing. So, I mean, if you get the drainage right and you get the fertility right, you're most of the way there. On top of that, you know, a lot of people will talk about the variety selection. And yeah, variety selection matters, but the problem is not even the smartest person in the world can tell you what variety to plant for sure, because they don't know what the weather is going to bring this year or any year. I mean, just last year we were super wet, crazy wet. Well, this year, drought. Last year, cold. This year, hot. Last year, late planting. This year, early planting. I mean, you don't know going into the year. So that's why we say spread your risk in terms of varieties. We do recommend seed treatments. We like biologicals. Try a lot of things. Just, you got to really pay attention to what you're spending. And, there are a lot of great things for yield. We got to make sure that they're economical along the way, too. Now, that does not mean don't try new stuff and don't try expensive stuff. I want you to try almost everything. Give it a fair shake and then see. But my point is, don't spend that on the entire farm. And how our dad always used to say it is, He goes, look, when you're going to try these things on a small scale, that's fine. But you try them on the whole farm and you screw up and that's how you go broke. So don't go broke. Try it on a small scale. Test it out. That's what we do. And we've been doing this stuff for years and years. And so that's why we can speak with pretty good authority, like, hey, potassium. You got to have your base saturation K up, for example. I mean, that's one of the things Darren and I were just talking about a little bit ago with silage and high population, for example. So this spring we said, yep, let's try some high population for silage. And we did in some fields, and we'll see how that all pans out. But the point is, Darren was out there and he goes, oh man, these stalks look spindly. And I go, well, yeah, but we don't have our fertility where it needs to be. Our base saturation K is only at 4 or 5%, and it's fairly heavy ground, so it's a lot of parts per million, but it is still not enough. And Darren brought up Stephen Albrecht. He's one of the greatest silage producers in the history of the world. He just passed away a couple, 3 years ago. But we got to know Stephen real well. He even had plots here on our farm, and he talked to us a lot about raising better silage. But if you looked at his soil tests, and I've got them, we show them occasionally at our soils clinics in the winter if you come here to the Morton Center and join us for one of our soils clinics. But anyway, he a lot of his levels were, if I remember right, 8 to 11% base saturation K. And this was on heavy ground. So the point is, if you want to push population, you got to have more K. So that's just it's just one of the things that, you know, we kind of learned. We talked to other people, prove it. And, you know, we're still working on some of that. But now we're finally to the point where we say, OK, like in this one field where we had silage and it was the stalks are spindly. We go, yep, 4 or 5%, not good enough. We're getting to 7 now. We are getting to 7. We're going to do it in one shot. I don't care what it costs. We're going to get it done. We own the ground. It's going to pay off. I know it because we've tested it. And that's kind of what we want you to do with your soybean thing too. Figure out in your case what you need. And we'd love to take a look at your soil tests. We can maybe give you some advice once we see those soil tests.
All right. Thank you very much for the question. This one comes from Gary, and we're talking about soil organic matter on the show today. And Gary said, I'm seeing something, and I'm wondering if you've ever seen anything like this. I didn't take soil samples in these spots last fall, but my November 2018 organic matter level was 2.6. On June 8th of this summer, my tests came back. I pulled a soil sample. It came back 5.2.
Yep, impossible.
And in August, it came back 7.3.
Yep, also impossible. So two things that I think of, and I don't know what happened, what went wrong. Actually, it could be three things. Number one, the quality of the lab where you sent this. Number two, the quality of the soil sample that you pulled. Was there other stuff? Was there residue in it? And there shouldn't have been. I mean, like above ground residue. And then the third thing would be, did you pull in the same spot? And that's the one that I believe would be most likely to be the culprit here. So this is, okay, so how we suggest pulling soil samples always is set up GPS points. Now, I don't care if you're big zones, small zones, big grids, small grids, couldn't care less. You do what you want to do. But the point is, within each grid or zone, you pick a GPS point, and that is your point. You drive right up to it. You pull two cores on each side, 2 to 3 cores on each side of your vehicle. You jump back in your vehicle, done. You throw those all those cores together. The labs anymore, they will blend it. They'll mix it. They'll do all that. I shouldn't say all labs. I know Midwest Labs does that in Omaha. I don't know about every other lab, but most labs will. So you just literally can throw all your soil cores in a bag, send it in, done. Okay. Then we have repeatability. And that's why I want you to have GPS points. If you wander about aimlessly across a zone or a grid, there's no way to reproduce that. No way to find out whether or not you're going forward or backward with your overall fertility program. So use GPS points. Always go back to the same points. And also, I'd rather have you do fewer spots more years in a row than say, oh, I'm going to do all my fields, but I'm only going to test once every 4 years. No, at least take a field or a half field or a quarter of a field. Test it every year, and then you can really see how you're progressing each and every year.
Thanks for all the questions today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.